We're in the middle of a voting period for a by-election for a seat on the community board at the moment. I have one of the candidates in the studio, Alan Vink. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Aaron.
So you've been on the board before, and people will be saying, well, the question is, you appear to have been voted off last time, but you're running again. So why do you feel that you should be running again?
Well, firstly, we needed an election. And I didn't think it was smart to have just one candidate go through without an election.
Yep, yep.
So I thought that was important.
Yep.
But also, secondly, well, actually, that would be the second reason. The first reason is I'm feeling a bit steamed up, as many people in town know, about the airfield issue.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, from my experience that I've had, plus knowing the reasonably well the inner workings of council, perhaps if I get a seat on the community board, I can deal with this issue maybe a bit more effectively.
I know you said in an interview with John a few weeks ago that you described yourself in that interview as a single issue candidate, and this was the issue. Are you still describing yourself as
that?
Well,
my profile says two issues, but this would be the primary one. Of course, time has moved on, so I would say equally to the airfield issue would be the issue of a good consultation on major issues for the community.
Yeah.
So I think that the airfield has raised that issue, that the council consulted badly, and you know, hundreds of people agree with that. So it raised for me yet again this perennial issue of good consultation, which of course is a statutory obligation for council,
yeah,
all councils.
Yeah. So where do you think the airfield's at the moment?
Who knows? We're watching it every day.
You've been staging protests on the airfield?
Oh, no, we wouldn't call it so much a protest. We sort of have a little catch up and a little meeting and just a little sit-in.
Okay, so what specifically about the airfield is?
Well, there should be no fence. There's no safety issue, so there should be no fence. And so we're very clear on that. And secondly, while we're discussing the airfield, we should also discuss the bigger issue of should we, number one, should we even have an airfield anymore?
Yeah.
And two, let's work with Māori and see if we can resolve the ownership issue.
Okay, so you know that stuff's happening with that already.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm in touch with iwi all the time. Had long conversations.
Okay. Who have you been talking to?
Oh, different ones, but Pablo in particular.
Okay. Just because Ngāti Mahanga felt the need to put something out on Facebook a while ago, reiterating that they already work with council in terms of running that area. Mm. And I know that council has just initiated the process of returning the lands with local iwi. So it feels like this is in hand, that it's happening.
Yeah, I don't think everyone sees it that way. And at the end of the day, I'm not a Māori, so I have to decide who am I going to primarily listen to. And I've made that call.
Yeah.
And I've chosen that it will be Pablo Rickard and the very large iwi that he represents. And so I make it my business to talk with him face-to-face, understand what his concerns are, and then make my own response accordingly.
Does his hapu have claims over that land?
Absolutely.
Okay. Ngāti Mahanga, because I was looking at Ngāti Mahanga's post earlier, and they were talking about the blocks where they have claims and another block where descendants of an individual, and I didn't know their name, so I just wanted to check in with that. I guess my question is, like, as far as I can tell, people are saying it's in hand, it's in process, and the Waitangi Tribunal reports come out determining what land belongs where, and a negotiation is going to get underway. It was going to be this month, but I think because of the COVID thing, I think they're trying to book a new date. But it does feel to me like it's in hand, it's happening.
Yeah, so let's see what happens. you know, bureaucracy's a weird and wonderful thing, and so let's see what happens.
Okay. With the fence, you said the airfield, there's no safety issue. Is that what you said before?
No safety issue. It's a straw man.
So there is a report from an expert saying there is a safety issue. So can you explain your thinking around that?
So the fundamental premise that the council have been debating, or had, you know, that they've come up with, and it's now a debate, that the report, which is a biased report in our view, is that there is a safety issue between people and between planes and people. And we're saying, well, there's no evidence of that whatsoever. And just because an aviation expert who was commissioned and paid for by the council, so it's hardly independent. Came up with a report and then said we need a fence. And we're saying, well, we don't need a fence. And other experts disagree with you. So we don't need a fence necessarily.
Who are the other experts?
There are other people in the aviation industry who do not believe there's a need for a fence.
Who are these people?
People that we've talked to in the aviation industry.
Like
in Hamilton.
Are you able to give me names?
In Hamilton. No, because I don't want to go on record, but they have a private view that you ring them, you have a chat, and you say, I don't want to be quoted. Fine, I'll respect that.
Okay, it's a pretty hard call to say that the report is biased.
Yeah, absolutely.
Has the writer of the report heard that?
No, I'm sure he has.
Okay, all right. If you know the workings of council, they've got a report from a recognised expert. They probably can't just ignore that, can they?
No, they can't, because they've invested so much time and effort and money into this. So they can't. And so now they have to keep the narrative going. And we're saying it's a flawed narrative.
But they're also, they've also said that if something were to, in the unlikely chance that something were to happen, and there was an investigation and it was found that the council had a report saying that there should be a fence, that they would be, they personally, like the management and council, would be liable for that.
Had a legal opinion on that, actually. There's no independent legal opinion on that very point. Secondly, it is so unlikely, because we haven't had an incident in 78 years.
I said that up front. It is pretty unlikely.
But we haven't had an independent, I haven't, and no one has seen an independent legal report as to who would be liable in the unlikely event of an accident that involved a plane and a person.
So it does look like they're going to build the fence. That's what they've said.
Mm.
Do you think that's now a foregone conclusion?
Not necessarily.
What could stop it? Well, I know there's all sorts of things that could stop it, right?
Of course it could. Aaron, you know that. So I'm not going to detail the various responses that could be made and may be made if they stubbornly go ahead.
Okay. Is your running on this issue an implied criticism of the current community board?
It is. There is an implication, yes.
I mean, are you? I haven't checked everything you've said everywhere. Have you been openly critical?
Yes.
Okay. So, all right, can you tell us?
Well, the major criticism would be the more recent one, where the community board made a decision to advise the council not to go ahead with the fence, and that motion was passed.
Yeah.
Had a majority, and now we've heard from the chairperson of the community board that she supports the building of a fence. So that's as far as we're concerned, and as far as I'm concerned, is unacceptable.
What forum did she say that?
She said it here in one of your interviews.
Okay, all right. I'm glad you were paying attention.
Well, I was referred to it. Someone heard it and said, Alan, you better have a listen to this.
But it doesn't, I guess saying that here doesn't carry quite the same weight as the community board's official recommendation.
Which is don't build the fence.
But we know, I mean, you and I both know that the community board doesn't hold any real power in this situation.
Well, it actually...
As,
does.
Well, they don't have their hands on the levers, right?
No, but it has actually got, it is a statutory body. It has power.
Well,
and that's one of the reasons why if I win a position, I will probably try and pull another lever that we perhaps traditionally haven't pulled.
Which is?
That we have statutory power. So we have in the legislation and in the recommendations from LGNZ, we have a role which is to be an advocate for the community. And if the community says no fence in terms of this issue, then that has to be listened to.
I've never heard anyone say that, that the community board has any power other than the power over their own discretionary fund.
No, we are a statutory body. We are sworn in on the same, exactly the same mandate as councillors, and we can call for an independent judicial review on decisions that council have made.
Okay,
we can go to the Attorney General's office. We can go to the Ombudsman. There are a number of levers we could pull, and community board members who have a statutory obligation to do what is right can pull.
Yeah. Council obviously are firmly of the belief that legally they have to do this. So do you think you'll be able to convince the rest of the board, or are there other board members that would vote with you to pull that lever?
Oh, I know for sure there are. And like, you know it too.
Well, yeah, but I don't know if there's enough.
No, maybe not. But people power is an amazing thing, Aaron, and we've seen that people power do incredible things against decisions from bureaucracy down through the years in New Zealand, and just wait and see.
Okay, all right. So that's, I want to talk about that issue up front, because that's the one that you've been most publicly visible on. For now, but let's also talk about you've been on the board before. I guess for you, as someone who's been on the board before, we can talk about previous accomplishments on the board or things you've done on the board. So do you want to talk about that a little bit, give us something there?
I've been chair for a couple of years, deputy chair for 6 years. Was a rookie, obviously, when I started in 2010. I had to learn the ways of council, which are mysterious at the best of times. I'm not necessarily critical of that. Every organisation has its unique ways. I don't think I understood, and certainly in the first term, I'd say I didn't understand fully my role.
Yeah.
Or the role of the community board. I think I'm very, very clear about that now. So in terms of accomplishments, I mean, I think that the lines, the one-way system at the wharf and the lines and the parking of that was one of my final accomplishments.
Yeah.
That lost the election for me.
Really?
Yeah, I think it did.
That was because that was unpopular with people?
No, it was unpopular with my colleagues, and they undermined my campaign.
Really? You're saying that?
Yeah.
And these are your same colleagues that are going to be on the board?
Some of them. Mm.
Yeah. So, all right, we've got to talk now about your relationship with the colleagues on the board and how can that operate if you're saying publicly in advance that they've been undermining you.
Look, the election process is what it is, and we all say things, we write things. That's the name of the game.
Yeah.
So
are you saying that they should accept that this is electioneering and that's what happens in electioneering?
That's what happens in electioneering. We see it very pronounced in central government. In fact, we see it very pronounced as we speak. There will probably be an announcement coming on any minute now, a news report about what's happening down in Wellington. So it goes on all the time.
It is the lead article. I hope we're not in for that, though.
It goes on all the time.
Okay. All right.
And the goal is to try and do it as professionally and respectfully as possible. That's my goal.
Okay.
But I will disagree, and they are entitled to disagree. That's the way it is.
Okay, all right. Let's just talk about, for people who don't know you, a little about just your background, your work life, and that sort of thing, and what, like I've always asked every candidate, what have they done in the past that can contribute to them being effective on the community board? So
yeah,
and I know you've already been on the community board, but let's go earlier than that. And
yeah, so I have worked. I started out in life as a high school teacher, which I loved that career. Then I went into church ministry, and then morphed from there into working in the not-for-profit sector, where I do a lot of work these days in advisory, blogging. So I do quite a bit of writing these days, advisory work, and consulting. And so I sit on a number of boards. I've sat on over 20 boards, yeah. Some of them international boards of organisations, mostly in the not-for-profit sector. So, yeah, I've had a lot of governance experience as well.
Okay. Do you think, this is just a question that intrigues me now, do you think being a teacher has, there's crossover kind of skills there?
I mean, look, I have such fond memories of my high school teaching days. Not only because of the classroom work, but also the extracurricular activities that I was involved in, which I embraced, you know, wholeheartedly. As a teacher, you have to learn to speak well, I suppose.
Yep.
That's what teachers do. And so maybe there's a crossover there. Certainly in high school teaching, certainly in the senior level, you've got to be, you've got to be pretty clear-headed, pretty logical, especially when you're teaching economics, business. Curriculum areas.
Yeah,
maths. I taught maths at junior level because I don't have much maths in my degree, but they needed maths, so I helped them and loved it.
Yeah. What about family? Like you've got kids.
Yeah, I got four boys, four daughter-in-laws.
Who are presumably adults now.
Yes. The oldest is 41, and it's scary.
Yeah.
I have 11, yeah, so four lovely daughter-in-laws and 11 grandchildren, and eight of which are here in Raglan.
Right.
Mm, two lots of four.
That's pretty cool.
It's really cool. We all live pretty close together.
Yeah. And you talked about church ministry before. Do you think, well, obviously you have a faith.
Yeah.
Do you think the faith has relevance to being in local politics?
Look, faith has informed my life since a young man, right? Yeah. And it's informed me in all the arenas that I've worked in. So, yes, in that respect, it informs what I do. It informs my values. It informs my life goals. So, in that respect, and everyone has... If it isn't faith, it's values, it's life goals. Everyone is informed by those same things, and so am I. So no different to anyone else, you know.
Yeah.
And so in that respect, it has an impact, but not in terms of always very careful when you're working in the public arena and in the public space that you're a member of civil society, and you've got to be so careful that your views and your values and your convictions are not imposed on others, because that's not right.
So you don't see a political position as a forum for spreading the gospel?
No, I never have.
That kind of thing?
Never have. I don't think anyone could look at my 9 years and say that was part of my agenda.
No, I mean, I totally agree. But we know that there are politicians out there who do a little bit, so with specific Christian political parties having popped up in the country at various times.
Yeah, well, I have a view on Christian political parties for starters, and I would never be a member of one.
Right.
I would never be involved with one. Let's be clear on that.
Yeah.
I don't think that's the way to be. I mean, I think it's valid. I do think it's valid because under an MMP system, you know, if you have convictions around climate, you can form a party around climate change issues.
Yeah.
You can form it around, sexuality issues if you want to, which Christians feel very strongly about.
Yeah.
So, go ahead. But I'm not sure that's the way to operate. That's not the way to operate in a civil society.
Yeah.
And in a democratic society.
Yeah. And questions that I always ask candidates as well, and I've probably asked you this before, What people often say, Raglan's a special place. Certainly, most of the people living here would say that. But what do you think? Can we get specific about that? What do you think it is about Raglan that's maybe different?
So I'm not sure I quite buy that narrative.
Okay.
Actually. Other than to say every town is unique.
Yeah.
Especially small coastal New Zealand, small rural New Zealand. It has a unique vibe. Yeah. They all do. Everyone. There's hundreds of them in New Zealand.
Yeah.
So, you know, Metro New Zealand, you know, it's this great mass of people and it's very hard to get a vibe. But wherever you go in small New Zealand, rural New Zealand, coastal New Zealand, it has its own vibe. So I don't think it's unique from any other, in that respect, from anywhere else. Not at all.
But it does have its own, like you've just said, every town has its own unique characteristics. Yeah. So what is our unique
stuff? I think, people have, I think I wrote about it a bit recently. We're quite eclectic. We have an interesting mix of people.
Yeah.
We have everybody from surf crazy people to art crazy people to music crazy people, you know, and everything in between. So it's an interesting place.
Yeah. And Where do you think?
I mean, crazy and passionate. That's what I should say. Passionate. Right.
Where do you think the town is going? Everything, but you know, change is always happening.
Yeah.
What direction are we changing, and is that a good direction?
So again, not a very popular view from my former days on community board. But look, change is inevitable. New Zealand has got so much room compared to Europe, the countries in Europe, for example, has so much space for more people. So bring it on.
Yeah.
But just manage it and manage it carefully. But bring it on, I say.
So there's...
It doesn't matter where it is in New Zealand, whether it's down the furthest spot down south, most furthest spot west or east, bring it on.
So how do we manage it, and what do we need to manage here? Not so much how, but what things need to be managed for our community?
So infrastructure is the big deal when you want to grow a town.
Yeah.
That your infrastructure can cope.
Yeah.
So in terms of, I mean, I think there's issues around education in this town. I think there's particularly secondary education. I think those sorts of things, but they're not the purview of council. But in terms of the purview of council, it's infrastructure. Make sure that infrastructure is tickety-boo and that you are permission-giving, that you don't hold up progress because you've got a bureaucratic
tangle
to get through. Get the tangle out,
yeah.
Get the knots out, and make this easy for people to do what has to be done when they want to build houses and when they want to do business.
So the infrastructure one is an interesting one at the moment, and that's probably outside of the community board's purview, but the whole Three Waters debate's happening right now.
Yeah.
Well, do you have any thoughts? Do you have any thoughts on that? Like, is it going to be better run by specialist entities?
I've done about 2 hours of reading on it.
Yeah.
About a month ago, and I came away from that not sure where I sit, and I'm still not sure. I worry about big bureaucracy.
Yeah.
I have an aversion to big bureaucracy. At the same time, there can be efficiencies in big bureaucracy. I understand we have got billions of dollars. So one of the drivers, of course, of this is billions of dollars of deferred maintenance, which, by the way, I think is, to say scandalous is a bit too strong, but it's shameful.
The ball has been dropped.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And this is not Waikato District on its own by any stretch. It's just countrywide.
Yeah.
And I think that when you and I pay rates, we're paying it in good faith that the pipes are going to be good. For crying out loud, the pipes are going to be good. They're going to be maintained. That's core business.
Should we have been paying more rates?
No. we need to make sure that the nice-to-haves are cut out and we stick to core business.
Okay,
I'm a strong go-back-to-basics is my mantra for councils.
Okay. Well, look, Alan, we're sort of coming near the end of the show for the morning. Thank you for coming in and being so forthright. Folks, we're talking to Alan Vink, who's running for the vacant seat on the Raglan Community Board. Off the top of your head, do you know when we need to have our postal votes?
Yeah, 9th of December.
9th of December.
So you have to be posted before then, though.
Yeah, so we've sort of got a week and a half.
That's a Saturday, so that's right.
Yeah, okay. All right, well, look, thank you heaps for coming in.
Yeah, welcome.
And good luck for the election.
Thanks.
All right, folks, we have reached the show, end of the show, like I just said, and we'll be talking to our other candidate, Kerry Binnersley, tomorrow morning at 8:15.